Welcome to Bonus Bites, a special mini-episode of the Triple D Podcast. These bite-sized episodes are packed with information about disability benefits, disability news, and answers to your burning questions. Get ready to take a bite of what's going on this week. Here's your host, Michael Weiner.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Bonus Bites. We have a special guest here with us today.
We've got a bonus biter Bonus Bites, don't we?
We do. We have a bonus biter. That's our new guest name.
Oh, gosh.
Our client concierge, Jordan.
Hello.
So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Jordan's going to talk a little bit about some of the struggles that people that are applying for disability benefits have been facing. And we're going to get to that in a little bit. But we have some really good headlines to talk about today. Listener questions. So let's go ahead and start off with our first headline. So this headline actually is a video that Social Security put out. And this is Commissioner O'Malley's response to phone wait times when he was being asked the question. So tell us about it, Michael.
Yeah, so this came from Senate hearings that the Commissioner of Social Security, Martin O'Malley, was participating in recently. And he's been on the Hill a lot in the last month. I mean, Social Security is under watch. And he was asked what he would do if the budget that was requested by the president was approved to fully fund Social Security. And the number one thing that he said was he would try and shore up the problem of the wait time when you call Social Security. You know, when people call Social Security for information, they're given a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-772-1213. I know it better than I know my own phone number. And the average amount of time that somebody has to wait on hold to speak to somebody when they call that number is 38 minutes right now, nationwide. 38 minutes. And just to like think about what that means for people, you know, people who desperately need information, a lot of people will give up, hang up.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly creates delays when we're trying to help people as advocates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can you just buy that problem away? Can you just snap your fingers and get the wait time down and get a human on the phone immediately? No, but I do think that what this at least symbolizes is that the commissioner is in tune with the fact that the agency is so out of touch with people, their responsiveness. And this might just be one example of that, but the fact that that's like such a high priority to shore up, I think it would do a lot of good for our clients. There's no question about it. Yeah.
So, and you would hope if they are able to get more money with a new budget approval, they would be able to hire more people and hopefully, you know, shorten that wait time, you know, a lot. So that would be good. Yeah. Jordan, I'm sure you hear from our clients all the time because you're checking in with them just to see how they are. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're frustrated. And when you're already frustrated, that wait time has to be tough.
Yeah. And I think that, what was it, 37 or 38?
38
I feel
minutes.
Like that's a low average. I hear stories from clients that they were on for hours.
You know, what's so funny is, and you made a comment about this on a recent episode, because 38 minutes was the number that they talked about in that congressional hearing, in that Senate hearing. But there was some statistic that Katie and I saw, which, because I remember I did a video about it, where the wait time, maybe it was a different number at Social Security, was to get some necessary service was hours.
Yeah.
There was the average wait time. So, you know, I don't know exactly where each of these statistics come from. You know, they're represented as generalizations. But the bottom line is people are waiting much longer than they should be waiting to get a simple question answered. And Social Security has, over the last few years, expanded their online services considerably, which is helpful, but they can't replace humans with certain information that people need. So it would be great if they could get this wait time down. People would really benefit from that.
Absolutely. All right, let's head on over to our next headline. So this was actually a fact sheet that was released from the White House. This is about the Republican Study Committee's budget. And it, you know, it, basically in the headline, it says that there are hits to Medicare and Social Security. So break that down for me a little bit and what it said.
So, you know,
and should we be
when
scared?
When I read something like this, part of me, I want to caution anybody who's listening, don't freak out when you see something like this. Every year, there's a response to the budget, there's a proposed budget by both parties, and the Democratic one looks like, let's overfund this, like these programs like crazy, and the Republican version is usually going the opposite, let's slash everything. What actually happens is politics. And that's why we don't just have one party ruling everything. So don't panic when you hear this. What's in, you know, I remember when President Trump was in office and the proposed budgets that would come out every year from the White House would make me, as somebody who's representing disabled people, think, oh, shoot, our clients are up a wall. Mm-hmm. Except you can't pass a budget with any of these things. And I mean, just to kind of help people understand what's on the sheet that this group, which is a voice for the Republican Party, but what they put, they want to cut over $1.5 trillion. That's T-R-I-L-L-I-O-N.
Spell check.
Spell check. Edit that. Over $1.5 trillion from Social Security and Medicare, which would mean increasing the retirement age to 69, cutting disability benefits altogether, significantly raising Medicare costs for seniors. At the end of the day, let's be realistic. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on. These politicians want to get elected. Okay. And nobody could ever get elected with an agenda like this. But, you know, it just serves as a further example of the fact that there's kind of a short window here right now. We don't know what's going to happen in this upcoming election. I don't think anybody can pretend to say the Democrats are going to win, the Republicans are going to win with any like realistic oomph behind it. We don't know. But, you know, these are things people should think about when they're deciding whether to cast their vote. Is this going to happen, what's on this piece of paper? No. But could small changes that have a big impact happen over time? Yeah. So it's important that we educate people, but I'm glad you said what you said, which is don't panic because of this. I see stuff like this every day.
Let's go over to our final headline, and this is from Disability Scoop. And this is kind of a little bit of an update, follow-up on something we've already talked about on a previous episode. So Social Security finalizes change to SSI benefits.
Yeah, and this is going to be a good one to get Jordan's take on. But for people who don't know, by the way, Jordan is our client concierge. Mm-hmm. And what that means is she doesn't work on our clients' disability cases. She helps them with programs in the community. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But if any of you are like, boy, did he need two blondes? Why did he need that?
He just wanted to look cool on YouTube.
No. Jordan serves such a crucial role in our office, and she'll have an interesting insight into this, which is there was a proposed rule that we talked about where they were going to stop calculating the value of food to take out of people's SSI benefits. Okay. So that third deduction that comes off the top, you know, the maximum amount that somebody can get in SSI benefits is $941 this year. But I would say the vast majority of people aren't getting $941. Social Security is slashing a third of that and saying that because they aren't responsible for paying for their own food, maybe they have SNAP benefits, maybe they're living in a household where food's provided to them mm-hmm. by somebody else and they're not expected to contribute, they slash a third. So most people are getting 920 something, 920, or not 920, 628, okay? Which is a third of that 941 being taken out. Now, this new rule, which was finalized, is going to do away with that. We're not going to be considering the value of people's food anymore. People should start seeing a higher amount in their SSI checks. Just that's a big thing
that's
for our
amazing.
Clients. Yeah. Yeah, you're so excited. I can look in your face. Yeah, that's amazing.
That is amazing just because I would say a lot of the questions I get just are about food in general and the high cost of food. Everything's going up and that even the people that get SNAP, it's not enough right now. And just based on the cost of everything. So that's great news.
I'm happy that Social Security realized that, you know. Yeah. The one thing that Social Security definitely has not, the amount of money that people receive every month, whether you're on SSD or SSI, certainly has not moved with inflation. And so, you know, to think that somebody on the high end is getting $941 per month, you know, when they're then going to take a third of that away, I don't know how anybody's expected to have a, you know, pay. I'm not talking, you know, a penthouse Manhattan right. apartment. I'm talking even like a studio in a bad inner city is going to yeah. take away all that money. And there's HUD rules that help with that, where people, there's a cap on how much of an SSI check they'd have to pay, and some of it's covered by the government. But overall, the standard of living that we've got our own citizens living in is really ridiculous. So this will help people. I'm happy about this.
Yeah. Change in the right direction.
Change
which
it
is
up.
Good.
Change it up.
Good. So, Jordan, I wanted to talk a little bit more. You know, we're seeing this positive change that will help people, but I know what you do within our practice, maybe if you want to explain it a little bit for everyone listening, so then yeah. we can kind of dive into what we really want to talk about today, which is kind of funding for programs that a lot of people rely on.
Yeah. So I link our clients with resources within their community. So we talked about food. I can link them and give them information for food pantries, for different bill assistance programs, just overall connections just to help the process of applying with us and working with us go a little bit easier.
Sure. So tell me what you've been seeing with these programs, because I know you joined Liner Legal in 2020.
Yeah, September of 2020.
And there was a lot of programs and a lot of assistance that you could refer our clients to.
I didn't realize it at the time, but there were so many programs available. And now as you know, I'm noticing that the COVID funding is phasing out and they're doing away with a lot of the programs that you know, I think should still be in place, but that's besides the point. A lot of the funding for the rental programs have ended. So, and this is state by state, of course, county by county, but it seems like rent is taking a big hit. The affordable connectivity program, which a lot of our clients have utilized to help with a phone, obtaining phone or internet assistance, that program ended in February, I believe. So they have phased that out, unfortunately. So, you know, I'm still, of course, if a client of ours reaches out and says, you know, I'm in need of rent, I'm in need of something, I'll always double check in the area because there are some programs that are still holding on, but I have noticed a lot starting to phase out, unfortunately.
How has that impacted our clients?
A lot, you know, they're suffering with their finances in general, and to know that they can't really lean on these programs anymore. It's especially the ones who've been, you know, dependent on them for maybe a couple of months and then it was just sort of taken away from them. That has been really hard for them. And so, you know, we talk about alternatives, but it's just a really hard spot right now.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, it does vary from county to county, state to state. Mm-hmm. So our clients can always call and you're always checking in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The programs that I'm noticing are still happening are for utilities. So the gas and electric, water, those still seem to be okay. But yeah, the rental one is not so much anymore. But please, you know, if you're a client of ours, please call and I'll, you know, always double check to see what's available.
Why don't we hop on over to our listener questions? We had so many questions that were submitted. We picked a couple of them to talk about this week. We're going to keep chipping away at the block and answering the questions as they come in and try to get into our backlog. So our first one is actually from our TikTok. And if you're not following us, make sure that you head to the TikTok. It's at Backwards Hat Barrister. Daily videos are posted, really good information from Michael himself, answering a lot of questions. I mean, so humble over here. but this first one actually is from our TikTok. So we read the comments, we pull questions from there. So this first one is, what if my doctor says that it is their policy not to fill out paperwork for disability benefits, even if they agree that I am disabled?
There is not a recourse. And unfortunately, that actually is the policy of many doctors' offices, particularly doctors who align with large hospital systems. So like in Ohio, for example, the Cleveland Clinic, they have a policy where they tell their doctors not to fill out any insurance forms or paperwork. Their fear, so people understand the rationale, they're worried that by filling that out, they are subjecting the doctor to possibly having to give depositions. basically it's going to take them away from the business of healthcare that they're being employed for. You know, there's not much I can tell a client when they say that. You know, what I do tell the client, maybe this is a great way to transition from that question, because you can't force your doctor to fill something out if they don't want to. We can't subpoena their opinion that way. Is what it does is it puts the importance back onto the client of when every single time, man, I feel like I say this in everything I do. Every single time you have an appointment with your provider, make sure you are letting them know about all your symptoms and functional limitations that are combining to make you unable to work. You cannot just expect that your doctor is documenting how much pain you appear to be in and how you, because of that pain, it's reasonable that you wouldn't be able to lift significant amounts of weight. If your doctor won't fill out paperwork like that, the best thing you can do is communicate your limitations to the doctor and hope that they're at least putting these things in the body of your treatment notes. The other tip that, again, we give a lot is use a medical records portal. Put the problems that you're having in writing to the doctor. So even if the doctor isn't, you know, filling out a form, when we request their records and we see the message that you sent your doctor in the records portal, and the doctor responded with, well, that doesn't make any sense. The subjective complaints aren't don't correspond to the objective findings. Instead, if they say, oh, that seems reasonable, here's how we can address it, or whatever they would put, then it's easier to explain to a judge why that's how somebody would be limited. So we can't force their hand, but we certainly can, you know, boost the communication with the doctor to try and get a better result at a hearing.
All right. And then our next one was submitted on our website. And if you want to submit a question, all you have to do is go to linerlegal.com, click the community tab and submit a question, or the Triple D podcast page and submit your question there. This one is actually about earning money while receiving benefits. And I know that there is a hard number on how much someone can earn while they're getting benefits. But this is a little bit of a different situation. So this person submitted this question. I started doing Instacart about 1 month ago, where I make between $50 and $200 per week. This job considers me an independent contractor. Is it required that I notify Social Security of this type of income? And if so, how?
Yes. I don't care what your income is, you should be reporting it to Social Security. So this might be self-employment income. That's just the tax form that gets filled out at the end, but it still goes towards Social Security's SGA. Now, if this person was receiving SSD benefits, Social Security disability, that's the minimum amount that that person would earn over a month is not going to have any impact on them, right? But I still always tell people, get in the habit of reporting your income, because the worst thing that could happen is, you know, 1 month or 2 months, you earn a little bit much, and then Social Security starts doing an investigation, requiring all kinds of paperwork that you don't know how to get. And potentially, if that happens long enough or consistently enough, says, you know, you owe us all this money back that we were paying you that you didn't provide. So even though $50 to $200 per week for this person won't make a difference, report it. For somebody who's receiving SSI, the way that it works is generally Social Security does not look at the first $85 of somebody's monthly income. But after that first $85, for every $2 you earn from working, $1 gets taken off of the SSI payment that you receive. So if this person was applying for SSI benefits, Social Security could say, wait a minute, you're earning $800 a month. We should have been paying you $350 less each month in SSI benefits, and create an overpayment that way. Yeah, I mean, that's why no matter what the question is, when somebody says, should I tell them about earnings? I don't care if you're earning $5 or $500. The answer is yes.
And how do they go about reporting that?
How does the individual go about it? So Social Security has a website that's specifically for this, that you can upload your payment records directly. They also have an app for that. So there's a lot of ways that you can report, but you should report.
All right. Well, that is all that we have for this week on Bonus Bites. I wanted to chat about the episode coming out next week. This was actually one that you recorded with bankruptcy attorney Adrian Hines.
It was warm out.
It wasn't
spring warm. It was fall warm.
Yeah. So this one was from a little while ago, but it was a really, really interesting conversation. Yeah. And we were at a donut shop. So I think you guys were trying a Girl Scout cookie donut.
Samoas.
At the time. Oh. Yeah, which is Samoas. My favorite cookie for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a really interesting conversation you had with Adrian.
Yeah. I'm excited to get to play this for everybody. I mean, Adrian is a bankruptcy attorney, but she's also really a significant social media influencer. She's got, I don't know, 100,000 followers on different platforms. So we were talking about all kinds of different things, but she's a good friend of mine. She's an awesome attorney. And it was great to catch up with her over a starchy treat.
And I know you guys also talk about her big thing is kind of breaking the stigma around bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And using it as a tool to, you know, kind of start fresh instead of thinking of it so shamefully. So definitely tune in for that episode next week on the Triple D podcast. Thank you, Jordan, for joining us this week. It was great to have your insight into the lives of our clients. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Bonus Bites, a mini episode of the Triple D podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe, and tune in next week for more disability news and headlines.